This episode is brought to you by KJK. Tired of the billable hour? KJK has a solution. The KJK GC Advantage program offers businesses comprehensive legal services in the areas of employment, corporate services, real estate, trademark, intellectual property, and estate planning, all for a set monthly fee. KJK serves as their clients' partners in business, not just their lawyers. Along with cost certainty and predictability, the KJK GC Advantage program gives clients peace of mind, knowing their projects will be handled quickly and efficiently, maximizing the return on investment on their legal spend. So don't go it alone. Let KJK help. Learn more by visiting kjk.com. Startups Nation, welcome to another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, your host, and I'm back for a very exciting episode because I have a great guest today, somebody in my world, right? The healthcare world always gets me excited. My special guest today is Brian Murray of NC. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Elio.
All right, so I'm a healthcare guy for life. I love being in the healthcare space. I love the problem. Well, I don't necessarily love the problems, but I am challenged by the problems of our current healthcare system and always excited to talk to the problem solvers in my space. But before we do that, I don't want to take for granted that the audience is familiar with who you are. So who is Brian Murray? Where are you from and how did you come to live in Columbus?
Yeah, so who is Brian Murray? Oh, Brian Murray. I came from a small town called Norwalk, Ohio, which is near Sandusky. If anyone knows drag racing, that's Norwalk is known for the Summit Motorsports Park, which is hosts a lot of the National Hot Rod Association drag racing events. So that's pretty big time. And you know, from a healthcare perspective, it seems like all my family, my sister, my mom, my aunts, everyone was a nurse or some form of healthcare profession. And, you know, same, I share that passion of, doing better for humans and providing for their care when they're not healthy. So that's kind of my background and for getting into healthcare. I went to Ohio State for my undergraduate degree, did a short stint in New Jersey, got my graduate degree in Georgia Tech, and then really just loved the little big town feel of Columbus when I was at Ohio State. So decided to move back after that short stint in Jersey and after completing my graduate degree to Columbus and raised our family here.
Okay, awesome. I'm always curious about why people studied what they studied. Outside of it being kind of a family business, why did you go into the profession that you did?
Yeah, honestly, I think I wanted to go to college, but yet wanted to get a job out of college. I mean, I had a lot of friends that were just majoring in sort of general topics and went and worked construction. there was a lot of construction companies in Norwalk, too. So I knew in healthcare I could do something. I was introduced to radiologic technology as I did a little side job working for a radiology billing company. So I went into that at Ohio State, and which is then I got introduced to the medical physics profession, which is what I then ultimately became a medical physicist, and which primarily our job is to ensure the safe and quality delivery of radiation in treatment and imaging in healthcare. So.
Okay, wonderful. I mean, hey, jobs should motivate action, right? At least when it comes to education, because that's the kind of economy that we are in, right? Essentially, going to school, learning should make you productive and produce skills that are highly sought after in this very competitive job market. Okay, so you do your graduate studies, and that's great. You did it for a job, but now you find yourself as an entrepreneur. So how did you know you wanted to be an entrepreneur after acquiring all those skills that prepared you to have a great job?
Yeah, I guess I can certainly say that I didn't really want to be an entrepreneur. I probably didn't even know what that was in college. Quite honestly, when I went to school, I just knew I wanted to get into healthcare. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. Getting that, like I said, I wanted to get a job. So I was rad tech, got introduced to medical physics. I focused on that and did it really well. and worked for medical physics consulting groups primarily throughout my career until I started helping build a comprehensive cancer center up in Sandusky, Ohio. Became really good friends with the physician owner. And what that was at the time, it was kind of not really heard of as combining medical oncology and radiation oncology. So it's all under one roof, which makes a lot of sense because sometimes you're going to get a chemo treatment and then get your radiation treatment right after. Plus the physicians and the staff that work in both kind of those areas, fostering collaboration and communication in a physical space really works. So in doing that, that lead physician really kind of became my mentor. It encouraged me to go out on my own. And at the time, I was working for a consulting group and just said, look, I want to come out here and just work in this cancer center, do that full time, not do consulting. But it wasn't a couple months later that this physician and a group of other physicians wanted to start a prostate brachytherapy program where we treat prostate cancer with radioactive seeds. They just couldn't own the equipment as physicians to do that. So I never forget sitting in a conference room. They all just kind of look at me and I'm just like, sure, I'll buy the equipment. And, I think that's what started that entrepreneur spirit of just, saying yes to the opportunity. And I think that's what helped me build that. At the time, it was just me and that physics group. And I grew that physics group to over 25 physicists with over $5 or $6 million in revenue. It was exciting. And I think I just kind of caught that entrepreneurial spirit. And even in the physics group, any new technology that came or opportunity for us, I just said yes. And I would look at my staff and they go, how are we going to do this? I go, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Let's go do it. And I think that's the entrepreneur spirit just really drives me.
We'll figure it out should be the motto, right? It should be like entrepreneurship. We'll figure it out. And that's really what it is. On a day-to-day basis, right? On any number of topics that make up running a business, whether it's on the HR side, the funding side, talking to lawyers or whatever the case may be. And in the healthcare side, dealing with regulators and, payers like Medicare and they're changing regulations as well. But you mentioned two things I wanted to pick up on, that sometimes you don't find entrepreneurship finds you, like when all of the rest of the physicians just turned and looked at you and that was the moment. But also something very important because of how lonely being a solo founder can be, the importance of having members or mentors or co-founders. How do you think that early partnership with a group of physicians and that early mentor really help you and shape you as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think for the most part, it for me, it was a support system and seeing particularly Steve Rashan, the guy that started the cancer center, he didn't have to do that. And, to see somebody that had the passion for doing it, when you can see someone do it, you feel a little more confident that, hey, I can do this too. And you have someone to bounce those ideas off of and really to watch him work, not only with just the construction staff, but we had to recruit physicians. Staff, we wanted good staff, and just to see how he portrayed his vision to make that grow, that's where it resonated with me. And just, it kind of really helps, again, build that confidence in yourself that you can go and do that out on your own. And then you learn a lot from that as well.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes is when you don't have that person to pick you up, you're not going to have a great day every day.
Right.
That's part of being an entrepreneur. You're not going to be on your A game every day. That's an unfair expectation to put on yourself. Sometimes you're going to just want to walk away from your computer for 2-3 weeks at a time, and you need somebody else in the company making that thing go when you have that feeling. So that's awesome advice, and it should be something that really gets heeded by entrepreneurs out there who are looking to start their first business. Do you have people in your world that can serve as a mentor, possibly a co-founder, to help you on this journey? It is a very long and sometimes lonely and very stressful process. Let's talk about entrepreneurial inspiration, right? Everybody has that person. For me, it's not really an entrepreneur. I love mentioning this person, Martin Luther King Jr., because he was such a visionary, right? And he demonstrated the power of words, right? That you could you could create a vision so powerful that once the world sees it, it can actually be transformed. But on the entrepreneur side, who or what inspired you or inspires you today?
Really, it's everybody. I think that I get inspired by my staff. I get inspired by my customers because, again, I think it's that, well, we'll figure it out attitude that I do with both. I'll have a customer that say, hey, we want to start looking at this and say, yeah, that's reasonable. Let's figure that out and let's make that happen. So I get really inspired by that. I don't know that there's a single individual where I just look up to and say, man, I just want to be like that. I think, you know, some of my friends are VC people, and I think I get a little inspired by them as well, just from how that all works from the financing perspective. And I guess saying that right now, it seems a little bit shallow that it's really about the money, but it's not really about the money. But what it has taught me as a medical physicist, not a businessman, you know, really how the business works. And that kind of also, you know, gets me inspired from a learning perspective. I mean, I just love to learn. And every day I like to go into work and somebody, whether it be my lead developer, my product owner, one of my customers, I'm learning something from them. And that's what really keeps me inspired all the time.
That's awesome, man. And so bring me up to speed. I know the company we're here to talk about, we're here to talk about you and hear your thoughts and learn about you, but we're also here to talk about NZ. So between the time that you started that company, scaled it, you said, I think 5-6 million, and today where you're starting the company NZ, bring us up to speed. Was it after you exited that company that you started NZ? What was that time period like for you in your career?
Yeah, there was overlap. So about 2015, I was still running. I started the physics group in 2007. And then in 2015 is when, you know, I kind of had the idea of I always enjoyed using computers to solve problems. And we certainly do that in medical physics, but was also appalled by, you know, in healthcare, we did a great job of building these EMR systems or electronic medical record systems, really helped my job out a lot. But then I had this whole component of measuring quality for the equipment that's providing the care. It was all done on paper. And it just really kind of, I was shocked by that. And sure, physicists, we use Excel spreadsheets, but those have their own problems. So that kind of got me into, again, in 2015, saying, hey, let's at least build something for the group. Maybe we can build something that we could commercialize a product to have a cloud-based system to manage all of that data from a QA perspective. So started that in 2015, bootstrapped it until I sold the company in 2018. I sold the physics practice, but the software company was with it. So I think my ex-wife was just really tired of me putting all our money back into the software. So it was really appealing to say, okay, well, we'll sell both. And then, you know, maybe we can have some backend, benefit from it. Turns out that company really wasn't interested in keeping that software going. So in 2020, late 2020, they said, look, you got to do something with this software stuff or we're just going to shut it down. So give us a plan. They gave me 2 weeks and I just came back to them. I said, my plan is I'm just going to take it over and I'll pay you a dollar for it. And they accepted that and got some friends and family funding after that and then kept going at it.
Okay, great. So the original problem that you were solving was, the fact that you were using sophisticated equipment. The equipment was had transitioned from paper, but you were providing quality results on paper, and it was just a disconnect, right? That was the original problem. So what is NZ now as it is today, right? After paying a dollar for it, and I'm sure some people are going to regret ever giving you that company, your company, I mean, giving it to you, maybe it's not the right term, but selling it to you for a dollar, right? Yeah. So what is NZ, right? And the problem you're solving and now the solution, what does it consist of as it is today?
Sure. Well, what we do at NZ, we're a cloud-based application to manage compliance with quality standards for equipment and personnel. And currently we're in radiology and radiation oncology, which is my specialty. So we want to expand. We want to get that out of out of radiology and radiation oncology, or expand it out into other areas of the hospital, because we're starting to see. In fact, we've had customers that said, "Hey, look, we want to manage our crash carts through here. Every week, we're going to our crash carts and we get a clipboard out and we make sure everything's in there that's supposed to be in there, that all the drugs are not expired." That all could be done with a computer system like NZ. So that's what we're doing at NZ. It's really taking all of that compliance with quality standards, the performance of those quality standards, and then compliance with those, and putting it into a cloud-based application that automates and manages that data. So the automation piece, if I could talk about that for a second. So let's take radiology, because again, that's our primary, where we're at. That CAT scanner, if I go get a CAT scan today, that CAT scanner has done some, the technologist running that has done some quality assurance testing on that scanner in the morning to make sure that the scanner is producing the quality images for the radiologist to make that interpretation of those images. That again was largely just done. What they do is they put a test object in the CAT scanner, they acquire some images, they perform some measurements on the screen on their display, and then they write the numbers down on a piece of paper. So what our app does is they put that test object in the scanner, they acquire those images, send them to us, we automatically analyze them, and then they just log in, say, yeah, that all looks good, and then hit approve, and then they're done. So we've made it more efficient for the technologist, and we've also improved the data collection, because as you can imagine, person A is going to do it different than person B. They might take measurements in a different position. You really can't determine the quality of the images and the performance of that scanner if there's variability for each person performing the test. So we eliminate that variability, which provides an opportunity to really look at and analyze these machines and say, hey, can we start to see trends and see when the quality has been going down so that we can take action to improve that quality and ultimately assure better outcomes.
All right, so we're going to completely geek out on images, measurements, and how you guys assure quality, right, or like accuracy with this technology. I'm going to geek out after the break. But before we do that, let's talk about the team necessary to build something like this. So this is an idea that you started with. You bought it for a dollar. You went to friends and family, raised around. But what is the team and culture that you're building in order to produce or build NZ?
Yeah, when I bring people into NZ and, you know, development, we're a software company. Development's our biggest hires. And development, hiring developers is a competitive market today. So that was a challenge. I can tell you that some of our early ones, and we could talk about lessons later, not the greatest and paying for that a little bit right now. But when we got the funding and took the company back over, bringing in people to our company really consisted of telling them what we're doing and having them really understand what we're doing, but also believe in what we're doing. And I think we have a really good development staff because they really wanted to do something where they were giving back to really humanity. And for us, it's healthcare, right? So if they can do something where we're improving something versus just, you know, solving a problem for, you know, an auto company to track how many windshields they replace or something like that. That's, you know, it's great, but it's not as fun and certainly not as rewarding as saying, hey, we're going to improve healthcare. So building that team of people that really believe in our mission of assuring quality, of improving better outcomes is kind of where we start with when we bring on people at NZ. So our team is committed. They're all behind that mission of improving healthcare. And I think that's what makes it so great.
Yeah. Now let's dig into that a little bit more. We'll talk about lessons learned a little bit later. You are right, because there's always lessons to be learned with every decision that you make as a founder. But in terms of developers, I know it's highly competitive, but you also probably are looking for people not only with the soft skills but the hard skills, right? So this is you're trying to build software that analyzes an image according to certain standards. And did you find that you need to hire developers that had these underlying understandings of ultimately what you were trying to accomplish? And then you play the role somewhat of a professor, right? Educating them on kind of that healthcare standard. Or how were you thinking about the people that you brought on board and then brought them up to speed with what they were actually building and understanding the context within which they were building?
Yeah, I don't think that it certainly wasn't a requirement for me to have the developers have experience in developing anything with healthcare. And in fact, it might even be a detriment because, you know, healthcare moves at a snail's pace, everybody knows. And the technology in healthcare, although in radiology and radiation oncology, we have some really great technology. But I think from a whole perspective where I'm going to have developers working, I don't think that that's a requirement. In fact, I'd rather think outside the box on how we can make an application where we're really changing the paradigm of paper records to electronic records to make it easier for that person to use. I'd rather have somebody that has more experience, you know, in applications where they're used to that, instead of just getting some back end stuff done. So that was step one to that hiring and getting them going. I think the other thing is, again, then their interest in it and having that interest. I was doing weekly physics talks with these guys and girls to kind of explain to them what it is we're doing, and they really got a lot of value of that. And I was actually really impressed with their interest. I thought, as I typically do, I teach occasionally at Ohio State, and you always think the students fall asleep, but I always think they're falling asleep. But they were asking really great questions, like, okay, they got this stuff, which is really, really cool. And I try to just make it as basic as possible, so we don't get into the weeds and totally geek out on the physics of all of that stuff. But I think having them understand that really motivated them to make the product better. And then talking to our customers, we have several of our dev team talk to our customers routinely so that they understand what they're doing and what they like to do.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Brian. And to all you developers out there, maybe one of the questions you ask if you're at an interview is, what am I going to learn here beyond being a great developer, right? Or how are you going to open my eyes to understand the actual industry that we're in? Because in my opinion, it's similar to me hiring writers here. They really have to understand human psychology, right? And what drives people, what people read, and what's interesting to people. And so those discussions enrich the life of a writer, not necessarily, hey, you got to crank out so many articles. So, Brian, I'm enjoying our conversation. We're going to take a quick break. We get some messages from our sponsors, and then we're going to geek out on technology. So thank you guys so much for hanging in there. We'll be right back after these messages.
Support for the 614 Startups Podcast comes from Nationwide. Nationwide's mission is to protect people, businesses, and futures with extraordinary care. To help fulfill that mission, Nationwide is looking to invest its $350 million venture capital investment fund in InsurTechs that will help them create new and exciting products and solutions to meet the needs of their customers. If you're interested in partnering with Nationwide's venture capital team, visit nationwideventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is nationwideventures.com. Nationwide is on your side. This episode is brought to you by Rev1. Rev1's mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. As you navigate the waters of business entrepreneurship, you don't have to go it alone. A strategic partnership with Rev1 connects innovators to the talent, customers, space, and funding you need when you need it. Get started with Rev1 Startup Studio by visiting rev1ventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is rev1ventures.com.
614 Startups Nation, welcome back to this conversation with Brian Murray of Enzi. Brian, it's time for us to geek out about your business and about your technology, okay? So you're recruiting this team of developers, you're educating them on the space that you guys are in, but share a little bit more about that first customer, right? Your original target market, the users and customers that you chose to serve first. What problem were they experiencing? And I think we kind of touched on that. And then the marketplace within which that problem exists.
Okay, yeah. So our very first paying customer, so owning the medical physics group, it was kind of easy for me to roll stuff out and tell my staff, you got to use this because I was their boss, which helped us really kind of develop it along the way. But our first customer was Kettering Health Network in near Dayton, Ohio, there or surrounding Dayton. And why they were so ideal was it's a perfect opportunity for, there was one person that was really in charge for all that quality testing around all the hospitals in the Kettering Health Network. And implementing this with very little implementation time, because it's a cloud-based system, we don't have to install anything on their network, or we didn't at the time. We do now, just a little one, just to transfer images. We can talk about that. But just being able to log in, start doing the work, I think was really exciting for them and really exciting for me as well. So that was really fun. It was a pretty big contract, which was great. And, that's one of the highlights of an entrepreneurial startup is getting that first check. I actually was talking to someone today, said, I don't mind posting checks because it's kind of fun, like seeing the money coming in for what you're doing and seeing, oh, I sent an invoice out. Somebody actually paid it. They're paying for this product that I have. So it's super exciting. So that got us into, you know, a fairly large network. We looked at other, we started getting then, you know, smaller imaging centers, and actually about midway, about a year and a half in, we had an opportunity that there was another software product that was doing the same thing only for MRI machines. And it was part, it was a small software, part of a very large corporation that they just wanted to get rid of the software. It just wasn't their thing. So we acquired them and brought on about 20 customers at that time. So we instantly went from one or two to 20 customers. And that was exciting, but also very, very challenging. But it really gave us that motivation to keep going and getting into what is currently now 54 hospitals across the U.S.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what I'm hearing is you guys do quality testing on equipment in imaging centers within medical complexes, hospitals, practices, standalones, the whole gamut, right? So if you're doing imaging and you want quality assurance assistance, then NZ is your company.
That's correct. So like I said, we, you know, they have to do the testing. There are state requirements. There's accrediting body requirements. There's payers or insurance company requirements to do this testing on equipment that delivers images or delivers treatment with radiation. And our application just automates that process for them as much as we can and manages all that data so they're not writing it on paper. That's exactly right. So radiology in hospitals, particularly larger hospital systems, which is our ideal customer, because again, you have typically one person that's in charge of all making sure that that's all done throughout the system. If I could talk a second about Emory University, which is one of our customers, and they wanted to determine, well, how compliant they were with performing that QC daily on CAT scanners. So they have 12 or so hospitals down around the Atlanta area, and they set out to do this project. What they did, they took a year, actually, and someone had to go around, collect all that paper. After a year, put all that information together, and they found out they were only about 87% of the time that they were actually performing or compliant with that quality standard. They implemented NZ, and then within 3 months, they bumped that up to about 99% compliance. So they were so impressed with that, and it's really because it made one. We made it easier. We made an opportunity for the managers to get alerted when the QC wasn't done, so they can just remind the techs. A lot of times it was just they did it and they didn't record it or something like that. But they were able to get that information automatically, and they were so impressed by it. They wrote a paper in the American College of Radiology, which got us really excited as well. So,
wow. When a customer raves about you, that is the holy grail. And in healthcare, we know if it's not documented, it didn't happen, right? So whether you said you did it, when the regulators come in, they just want to see somewhere, whether on paper or in the cloud, that this was performed and how accurate this machine was. Now, when you approach a customer, do they recognize this as a problem already? Or are you having to enlighten them? Meaning, is the status quo in this industry primarily what you're fighting against, or are they already in search of a solution?
You know, it's probably largely the former, and that is, it is status quo. They're like, you know what? Our inspections are great. Everything's okay. I think we're fine. So I think there's a lot of that status quo. Like with any environment where you're doing it, when you're shifting, you know, from paper to electronic, I think they think paper's faster. We hear a lot of that. We're just now starting to see where people actually get really excited about it. And we've also learned how to, you know, sell them on, hey, not only we're changing that process, but look what you can do with that. You can actually really know what we call prospective auditing. You will know exactly what an inspector is going to see coming into the department. So then I asked them, well, how long does it take you to prepare for an inspection? You know, this date's coming in. How long do you prepare for that? And their typical answer is, a couple of weeks. We get all our papers together. We spend a couple of weeks putting that together. I'm like, you could eliminate that because everything is right there. It's in real time. You know where you're at from a compliance perspective. And that's where they get really excited. Go, oh, they didn't really think about it. So when you're trying to shift people's paradigm and shift the way that they do things, you kind of have to sort of hit them over the head and say, no, you're not seeing what actually can happen here and how this can benefit you. And that's worked for us really well.
Okay. So now this is a little bit of advice or tip for a founder out there looking for the first customer.
right? Or who might be faced with the status quo, where it's nice, but no thank you.
Yeah.
Right. Initiating those conversations or finding that pain point, you were able to, because of your experience in the industry, ask a very simple question. It's very simple on the surface, but this is how you destroy the status quo. How long does it take you to prepare for the regulators? Right. Now, that question alone changes the conversation from no, paper is quicker, to oh my goodness, I cannot not have that thought anymore. Right. So how did you arrive at that very important question to then really begin a conversation? Because everything up until that point, the status quo is too strong. Right. You're not really getting through to get to your value proposition. So how long did it take you to get to your question? What are your thoughts on entrepreneurs out there still looking for a question that powerful?
Yeah. The great thing, you know, as entrepreneurs, we have this vision, so we kind of see the whole picture, right? And I did spend a lot of time like, well, you don't understand. This is what it does. It's great. I'm a medical physicist. I understand this. But it kind of took my going back to, okay, well, where were my pain points? And aside from actually performing, but I would get so frustrated having to sit on these committees preparing for inspections. I mean, here I'm, medical physicists make decent money. And to sit in a room with a bunch of other people going over all our paper documentation saying, oh, we missed this. Go find so-and-so to find that documentation. The time wasted. I hate wasting time. I had a physician tell me, like, I don't mind spending time or money. I hate wasting time and money. And it's the same thing. I don't like to waste time. And that just felt like a big time waste for me. And it just kind of clicked with me. Like, that resonates with a lot of people, especially, I think, people in healthcare. They don't want to waste time. They want to care for their patients. They want to do their job and go home. They don't want to waste a bunch of time so that they're always on the clock. So let's minimize that by providing a solution that helps them.
Yeah. Now, in terms of scale, so you're at 50 plus clients, and you're the market. Give me some sense of what some major milestones for you would be. And then what does NZ need to look like as you progress towards these milestones? What do you need to do to get there?
Sure. So there's over 6,000 registered hospitals in the United States. So the market's very large. From a modality perspective, I don't have the numbers on that, but meaning CAT scans, MRIs, all these machines that are using imaging and treatment, linear accelerators, hundreds of thousands of those machines. So the market is definitely out there. So you asked this scale.
Yeah, like major milestones. Like, okay, you got 54 now. There's 6,000 potentially. Let's multiply that by, 100 machines. Let's call it 600,000 machines, right? And that's the big number. But in terms of major milestones by the end of 2023, maybe 5 years out, 10 years out, how are you thinking about scaling to serve more customers?
Yeah, the past few years has still been developing the technology, really making those automatic analysis algorithms that we use, honing those so that they're better and better every time we use them. The more customers that we have, the more data we're getting, and we're putting that back into those algorithms to make that even better when they're doing that auto analysis. So that's, we spent a lot of time with that. The next step then was all the sales, that those 54 sales came from the acquisition of the other company and me going out into the profession that I know and, talking to people that I know, going to conferences and asking them. So we hired a salesperson last year. We developed a marketing plan and implemented that plan. So for 2023, we're really excited because now we have all those pieces in place. Now we have a really good app that really works really well for multiple modalities. We have a sales team, one person, and then a marketing plan that we're going out there and getting our name out there, getting in front of people. Our marketing company is doing a really good job of providing, content that gets people interested in, hey, what are these guys doing? Oh, that makes sense to me. Quality is important. Let's figure out how to do that. So we want to double sales. I mean, we're just focused right now on doubling sales for 2023, putting that sales plan into process. And then the other thing is, we still have a lot of growth that we can do with these auto analyze algorithms. And I'm really excited about that. We have a student intern from Ohio State, a graduate level student that's really interested in artificial intelligence. And what we want to do is, again, we have all these images now. We have literally almost 100,000 images in our database that we can use to use artificial intelligence to make the process even easier for the technologists that are performing those. So we get really excited about expanding those features and expanding the radiology over the next couple of years, doubling that revenue. And the second thing is expanding into another department of radiation oncology. That's where I spent most of my time in medical physics, but all of our customers are radiology currently. We now built the algorithms to allow us to go into a kind of totally different department with the machines different, the QA is different. We had to make some tweaks to what we were doing, but we built that out last year so we can start growing in that area this year as well.
All right. So I'm going to give you the classic challenge of, that comes with success. Right, you get to 54 with one salesperson, right? Life's good, couple big checks, catering doesn't, nice, right? Comfy. But what you could get in a situation like that, especially if your customers start to bring you more problems, like, oh, our crash cards, oh, our whatever, is shiny object syndrome. Mm-hmm. So how does a CEO of a young company, an experienced CEO of a young company, not get caught in the trap of shiny object syndrome when there's so much still in front of you with the potential of the first problem that you're solving? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, that's really funny. I started to laugh just because I am that shiny object guy. So certainly in the first few years, that's really, and arguably led to a lot of the spaghetti code that we had to deal with too, is just really trying to please everybody all the time. And it really only hasn't been until recently where it's take a step back, you have a great product, it's not the perfect thing that you want, but you have that, call it an MVP if you want, the minimally viable product, but you have that product, go sell that, get it in the departments, and then continue to work on it. It's discipline. And you're right. I think a lot of entrepreneurs probably have that because you just want customers. And initially, yeah, I think I promised the world. That could be dangerous too, because it'll backfire on you. They'll say, hey, you told us you were going to have this and this, and you're not even on, it's not even on your roadmap for another year. So, definitely promise less, focus on this is the problem and this is what the solution we have for you. Get it. And you'll be happy to stay on with us, which is also another good reason to have a subscription-based model. They keep going on a subscription. They keep getting the improvements. They don't have to load any new software or anything like that. They just get the improvements and they just keep getting happier every year, and you keep charging them more and grow that business.
Okay. I'm a shiny object guy. So that's immediately what came to mind when you started talking about growth and the intern working on AI and things like that. So I had to ask that question. But when you think about initially, before you had hundreds of thousands of images, you were QAing something, you were quality controlling something that was producing an image. Were you comparing that image? How were you quality controlling to return a result that gives them a green check or a red X? Like, what in your system, that technology that recognizes this is a ball, this is what a ball is supposed to look like, this is a bumpy ball, right? Like, it has ridges on it. How were you able to compare and then give back to your customer assurance that their machine is accurate?
Yeah, so fortunately for us, those standards have already been well documented throughout time by professional organizations like the American Association of Physicists and Medicine that I'm part of, like the state regulatory bodies, like the American College of Radiology. So they say, I'll use MRI as an example. They're the most standardized modality. The ACR has a phantom or a test object that they developed, that they specified. And they said, you use this. These are the exact measurements you take on each section of the phantom. And again, now go out there and do it. So they were doing it by hand. We just automated that process and made it a lot easier for them. So we were very fortunate in that. We're using the AI stuff now so that what we see is a lot of the times those quality tests will fail, probably because the technologist just put the test object in incorrectly. And what we want to do is say, well, just give us the image. We'll know what it's supposed to look like, and we'll manipulate the data to put it in the right spot. So then we can actually take the measurements, which are really important.
Gotcha. All right. And the next thing I want to talk to you about is as you start to
bring on more customers and you have these plans to expand because there's so much opportunity in the market to expand, you're a bootstrapper, right? But now you need to go out and raise capital. We're talking about skills on top of skills on top of skills. We talked about lessons learned in hiring. There are many lessons to be learned in raising a round. So why did you decide to raise a round? And what are some of the lessons that you learned in that process? I know you guys just announced a round not too long ago.
Yeah. So we needed that because when we took it back over, I just knew, you know, I needed the staff to do what we wanted to do. We did have an MVP, but and a tiny MVP that I just knew we couldn't get the sales without growing that. So growing the customer base. So I knew we again, after the friends and family, that really after I took it over, just to make sure I was still had to manage the physics group. So I had somebody helping me manage the software company. We had one developer at the time and one customer success person that, you know, dealt with the support issues and knew that couldn't sustain and grow a business, right? We needed to grow that more. I wasn't confident that we can grow enough in sales. I didn't think, and that was also not only a shiny object to me, I'm also my own worst critic. It's very difficult for me to go into a medical physics area and not have a, you know, the best product, you know, not as something that's perfect. And so that just didn't give me the confidence. So, you know, the person that I had running with me kind of convinced me, like, let's do this VC route. I'll do all the work. And he did. It was great. We partnered with Rev1, which is a great, you know, sort of incubator firm here that taught us a lot before they actually, I mean, we were engaged with them for a year, going to classes on, you know, business compliance, spreadsheets, whatever it is from a business perspective, an entrepreneurial perspective, they helped you with, and then ultimately became our lead fund or investor. Now, lessons learned. We've given so many pitches, I can't even tell you. I can't even count. But the biggest thing is really related to the shiny new object. Investors will tell you that this is the direction you should go. This is the direction you should go. They haven't even invested yet. And they're going to tell you all this. And all you're thinking is, oh, this cat's got 500 grand for me. I better say, yeah, we could do that. We could do that. You start to shift. You start to see over time, over those pitches, you start to shift what your mission is. And now you're this whole thing that you don't even know what it is. And now you're not even comfortable pitching because this isn't the direction I was going. So I think a good lesson to learn is, like, stick with your story, stick with your mission, and don't let that noise of all these, they're not going to invest in you. So the heck with them. Just stick with it. Say, this is what we're doing. If it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit. One thing that's also really hard that I keep hearing, we kept hearing in our engagement with Rev1 is, you know, investors are going to call your baby ugly. So make sure you're ready for that. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought because I was on that baby ugly thing.
Yeah. And then you saw an ugly baby in your mind and it completely threw you off. All right. So erase that ugly baby, right? Investors are going to tell you have an ugly baby. If it comes back to you, just interrupt me. But I want to pivot because some of what you're saying may be kind of a regional thing when talking to an investor. So let's try to place us here. You said so many pitches. Did you have a pitch concentration in an area where you heard certain things that might give you a feel of, you know, like the culture of particular investors in certain ecosystems? So did you find yourself having to pitch across the country, concentrated in the Midwest? Where did you spend most of your time in terms of people that you talked to that you were looking to raise funding from?
Yeah, we were all over, mostly Midwest, but it was the West Coast and East Coast ones that were really, I mean, they want high valuations and they always had something to say. But it's not to say that there weren't some of those in the Midwest either. So again, it just, you know, having investors really lead you in a direction you don't want to go with the carrot of money is you got to fight that. The thought came to me again.
That's okay, man. Now you just need a pen or grab your phone. If it comes back to you, just start typing. Okay.
I know what it is. In Rev1 is, you know, you're also, it's a marriage kind of, you know, yes, you want the money and that's a hard thing to get over. I was just like, well, wait, they're doing me a favor. So I got to be this guy. So I get this thing. But in fairness, you're actually vetting them as well. You don't want an investor in your company that's going to want to, you know, run you and tell you that this is the direction you should go and things like that. You want a nice marriage, someone that might help you and provide assistance, but not be the one that's just going to ram something, their agenda down your throat either. So you forget that it's actually a two-way street when you're pitching. It seems a lot like a one-way street, but it's really a two-way street as well.
All right, we got to do another episode on dating investors before you get married, okay? I think that would make for a juicy, juicy series with some entrepreneurs telling us some stories about how to appropriately date your investor before you get married. All right, folks, you are listening to my conversation with Brian Murray of Enzi. We're going to take a final break, and when we come back, we're going to hear about what's next for this great Columbus company. We'll be right back.
Support for the 614 Startups podcast comes from Book and Street. Book and Street provides finance and accounting solutions for startups in the Midwest and beyond. From strategic financial support to bookkeeping and everything in between, they've got your back office covered. Let their experienced team of finance and accounting professionals help your startup get it right from the start. Learn more at bookandstreet.com and set up your free 30-minute consultation with their team today.
Today's episode is sponsored by the City of Dublin's Division of Economic Development. The City of Dublin provides world-class tailored business services and resources to ensure the best possible environment for businesses to recruit talent and thrive. Because of this strategic focus and commitment to employer growth, Dublin is the only accredited economic development organization in the state of Ohio. The City of Dublin supports startups and entrepreneurs by offering targeted resources and training programs to grow companies that are financially sustainable, innovative, and committed to creating jobs. Learn how other businesses depend on Dublin. Visit thriveindublinohio.com.
614 Startups Nation, welcome back. You're back for the final break. That means you guys are committed to getting all the knowledge you need to build a successful company. I'm continuing my conversation with Brian Murray of Enzi. All right, Brian, you laid the groundwork. You got some dry powder. What's next for Enzi?
Yeah, what's next is it kind of hinted to it earlier. Just this year, we're focused on growing our sales, but you know, after that, it's just so that we can prove our multi-department solution, radiology and radiation oncology, and then become our ultimate goal is to become a platform for all equipment and all personnel in the hospital to ensure that the quality delivery of healthcare. So expanding into other departments is where we want to go. And whether that's the next round of funding or we kill it in sales and we're feeling like we're doing okay and we can hire enough people to continue to move on and stay profitable, that remains to be seen, but our goal is to do that. And if we need that injection of funding to do it, then we'll do it. But have that platform so that ultimately we'd like to see a hospital just have a score. What's my compliance score with quality? And if it's 98, let me dive into that score and find out, well, where are my gaps? Is it because half of my nursing staff hasn't completed their continuing education? Is it all my CAT scanners have been giving bad data for the last 6 months? Let me understand that so that we can improve that score. And I can confidently say, as the CEO of a hospital, we have the highest quality score of healthcare in my region.
Yeah, that's an incredible ambition. A lot of moving parts there,
yeah.
Particularly with scaling up a sales department and kind of having that repeatable and scalable sales operating model. That's something that I'm working with. In my day job, it is an incredible challenge. So you have a lot ahead of you, and you're trying to improve technology, learn from customers, build culture, and all of that. So that is the challenge of being a founder and leading a company. So, you know, wishing you well, but always before I let my guests go, well, actually, in terms of building your team, maybe this might be an opportunity. Are there particular roles that you're hiring for right now? How do people get a hold of you before we get your final word here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, nzhealth.com, if you want to go to our website and learn more about us. Certainly for this year, we are funded to maintain and grow the revenue. And that's really all we're focused on now. When we start meeting our sales goals for the first couple of quarters, we will need people to help implement the application in the radiology departments. And we've hired x-ray techs in the past, And that's what we prefer because they have the experience. They know how to talk the language in radiology. That really helps them out. And they ultimately work as a customer success person for us. So those hires will start happening mid-year.
Okay, awesome. Well, put Enzi on your watch list for companies to watch and follow over the next 6 months or over the next year. All right, so final word from you. I want to ask of you one piece of advice for entrepreneurs who are earlier in their journey, something that you've learned, something that you wish you knew earlier in your journey.
Yeah, again, I was really affected by if you're doing the VC funding, you know, having people kind of sway me on which direction to go in a company. You have this vision, stick with your vision, have that plan, go into it. I mean, it's always, sometimes the plan's going to change, but keep that vision the same. It's, you know, traction, everyone's looking at the EOS, the entrepreneurial operating system. The vision is the thing, right? Stay in that vision. I mean, I think I lived that, and I wish I would have believed that more. I read that book prior to, you know, several years ago. I wish I would have just lived that a little bit more, just sticking to the vision. And then, you know, piecing it out so that you know where you can get to it and when. Kind of just how I did. You know, I went full big, right there at the end. Like, hey, what's next for Enzi is we're going to be the number one with the quality score that everyone's going to want to achieve. That you're right. That's going to take a long time. But that's the vision that, you know, you got to stick with that vision. And then those little pieces will come in and build that eventually.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time and your insight. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Thank you so much. Now I'm going to give my final words. So sometimes serendipity works in such a way that things come full circle. At the beginning of the podcast, my entrepreneurial inspiration, Dr. King, and we talked about vision. And yeah. Oh my goodness, all the way at the end, what you said was, in the process of raising funds, one of the lessons that I learned was this conviction about vision. Now, you guys are going to get a ton of gems from this, but there's a bit of serendipity happening here for somebody who's listening to this episode about keeping with your conviction. Dr. King probably got told by a million people that this was never going to happen. He needed to scale back. Voting rights is not going to happen. America is America. It's not going to change. But my goodness, the conviction in that man's vision changed the world. And if you're an entrepreneur out there and you're not quite sure what direction to go in, somewhere deep within you, that vision exists, and hold on to it. All right, 614 Startups Nation, that's been another episode. Share this with your friends. And until next time, peace.
That's a wrap, folks. You can find this and all our episodes on our website, 614startups.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you'd like updates sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website. To engage in the 614 Startups community, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at 614 Startups on all platforms, and join the conversation. For sponsorship opportunities and collaborations, email us at info@614startups.com.